Have you ever been part of like a massive professional project that just felt completely doomed from literally day one?
Oh, I think anyone in business knows that exact feeling.
Right. You know the exact kind of scenario. You're sitting in the kickoff meeting, the coffee is fresh, everyone around the table is, nodding and smiling.
And the slide deck looks absolutely
Man,
fantastic.
slide deck is beautiful. But then you flash forward maybe 3 months, the budget is completely blown, the timeline has become this running joke in the office.
And the software you're supposedly building is solving a problem that nobody in your company actually has.
Exactly. It is a universal professional pain point. And frankly, it's just agonizing to live through. So, welcome to the Depth Dive. Today, we are grabbing a lifeline for that exact situation.
We really are. We've got our hands on a really compelling excerpt from the 2026 Guide to Software Development RFPs.
Yeah, and it was put together by Technegean. And while the context of the guide is geared toward Orange County businesses, let me assure you, the underlying mechanics here, why tech projects succeed or fail, they're universally applicable.
Whether your headquarters are in California or Copenhagen, honestly. It is a genuinely critical read because it attacks the root cause of that project failure you just described.
The dreaded kickoff disaster.
Right. We aren't just going to look at the anatomy of a modern request for proposal. We're going to look at the underlying psychology and the business logic of why it actually
Which
matters.
is huge.
By the end of our time today, you'll be completely equipped to critically evaluate any tech vendor and overhaul how your organization communicates its tech needs.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because an RFP, historically anyway, is viewed as this incredibly dry, bureaucratic procurement
Oh,
document.
totally. People hate them.
Right. It's usually treated as the annoying paperwork you have to file before the quote-unquote real work can finally begin. But our source material completely flips that script.
It does. The premise here is that the RFP is the exact blueprint that dictates your project's destiny.
It determines whether you start on a solid foundation of shared understanding or just a fragile mountain of accumulated misalignment.
And the reality of the industry right now is that most businesses fail before they even finish typing up the first page of that document.
Wait, really? The first page?
Yeah, they doom the project from the very first keystroke because they fundamentally misunderstand what an RFP is actually supposed to achieve.
So the source points out a foundational mistake happening across the board. Most people aren't actually writing a request for proposal. They're writing a highly specific technical specification and just, slapping the letters RFP on the cover.
Which completely defeats the purpose.
There's a hilarious but honestly kind of tragic example of this in the text. Imagine an RFP that says, "We need you to build a React front end with a Node.js API and a PostgreSQL backend that includes these 47 specific screens."
Issuing a document like that is just a disaster waiting to happen.
Why is it so bad, though?
Well, if you define the scope at that granular solution-oriented level without consulting the expertise of the people actually engineering the software, you aren't asking for a proposal.
You're just giving orders.
Exactly. You're demanding a fixed price development contract that is practically begging to fail. You're boxing the vendor in instead of allowing a custom solution to emerge from your actual business problem.
To play devil's advocate for a second, though, isn't it significantly faster to just tell a vendor exactly what we want if we already have a strong internal vision? Like, if I know my team needs 47 screens, why beat around the bush and make the vendor guess?
Because you are hiring experts. Specifically because they possess knowledge and architectural foresight that you don't have.
Okay, fair point.
When you hand a vendor a preordained architecture and a rigid checklist of screens, you're effectively silencing their expertise. You're removing their ability to analyze your operation and say, hey, given your user volume, there's a much more efficient way to structure this database.
Or they might say, "You don't actually need 47 screens."
Right. They might say, you just need a dynamic, role-based dashboard that consolidates all that data.
It's like going to a highly specialized surgeon, and instead of describing your symptoms or telling them where it hurts, you hand them a step-by-step, self-written guide on how to perform your appendectomy.
That is a perfect analogy. You are completely bypassing the diagnostic phase, which is exactly where the true value of an expert lies.
So you're paying for their brain, but you aren't letting them use it.
Exactly. And this connects directly to the internal prerequisites that must be established before you even open a blank document to draft your RFP. Your internal team must establish your evaluation criteria first.
Meaning the internal stakeholders need to sit down and ask some really hard questions, like, are we prioritizing the vendor's technical approach above all else? Or are we heavily weighting their corporate culture?
Or is this purely a race to the bottom on price?
Right, because if you don't secure internal alignment on those priorities before the proposals start rolling in, you're going to be completely swayed by whichever vendor delivers the flashiest pitch.
Vendors are incredibly skilled at pushing your unstated assumptions.
Oh, I bet.
If a vendor comes in with this dazzling, impossibly low-cost proposal, but zero cultural fit, and your internal team hasn't explicitly decided that cultural fit is a non-negotiable deal-breaker, you will be tempted to compromise.
You'll just take the cheap option and regret it later.
Exactly. You have to know what you value most before the suitors even show up.
So, assuming we've agreed internally and we've sworn off handing over that rigid list of 47 screens, we need a new way to communicate. We have to translate our business pain into a language that vendors can actually use.
And a huge part of that comes down to brutal honesty. Honesty about the company's current state and the problem itself. You have to remember that a top-tier development vendor is evaluating your organization just as rigorously as you are evaluating them.
Right, it's a two-way street.
Exactly. Mm. Premier vendors will absolutely walk away from a potential engagement if the client relationship looks unnecessarily difficult, or if the core requirements seem unstable.
Or if the stated budget doesn't match the reality of the scope.
Yep. So providing context like your industry, company size, and your current tech stack, that's just table stakes.
But the real pivot happens when you document the cost of your current problem. The source text is really firm on this. It is not enough to just say, our inventory software is slow.
Yo, you have to quantify the bleed.
You need to articulate how the problem is handled manually today and exactly what it is costing the organization, like in wasted labor hours or critical shipping errors or missed sales opportunities.
Because a vague problem statement will always, without fail, produce a vague proposal.
Makes sense.
If the vendor doesn't understand the financial or operational bleed of your current setup, they cannot accurately scope the return on investment of their solution. They need to know, are they solving a $10,000 annoyance or a $10 million operational bottleneck?
But if I'm quantifying the pain without prescribing the technical solution, how do I actually guarantee the software does what my team needs it to do? This is where the concept of functional requirements gets tricky for me.
It does get tricky.
Like, if I can't list my features, what do I actually write?
Well, the most effective framework for this is utilizing jobs to be done or user stories. This shifts the focus entirely from the interface to the human being using the system.
Let's look at the difference in those approaches. A traditional flawed requirement would say the system must have a sales pipeline view. That dictates a very specific type of feature.
Right, you're back to designing screens.
Exactly. But a jobs to be done requirement states a sales representative needs to see all open opportunities along with their next required action and due date from a single screen.
Notice how that second approach changes the dynamic. It describes a necessary operational outcome for a specific user.
It gives the software engineer the creative freedom to actually design the best way to achieve that outcome.
But defining the functional outcome is really only half the battle. The invisible, non-functional requirements are where most businesses, especially in dense commercial hubs like Orange County, have massive blind spots, project-killing blind spots.
We're talking about the architectural bedrock here. Things like performance load times under stress, concurrent user capacity, and rigorous security standards.
Compliance is a monumental factor here. Are you handling healthcare data that requires strict IPI adherence? Do you need SOC2 compliance for enterprise SaaS sales?
Or maybe you're bound by the CCPA for California consumer privacy or FINRA regulations for financial services.
These are not simply legal checkboxes you tick at the very end of the project. They fundamentally dictate the architecture of the software from day one.
How does that actually play out in the code, though? Why does a compliance standard change the underlying architecture?
Let's take HIPAA or FINRA as an example. Those regulations require highly specific data encryption, both at rest and in transit. They require immutable audit logging so you can see exactly who accessed what record and when.
Okay, so a lot of tracking.
A lot. And they often require dedicated, isolated server environments rather than shared, multi-tenant databases. If you don't explicitly state a FINRA compliance requirement up front, a vendor might build a brilliantly fast, lightweight solution that is entirely illegal for your company to deploy.
Oh, wow. And fixing that after the fact isn't just a quick tweak, right?
Yeah, not at all. It's a complete teardown and rebuild.
Which brings us to another massive hidden iceberg that routinely destroys development budgets. technical constraints, and mandatory integrations.
What's fascinating here is that undisclosed integrations are universally cited as the number one source of scope change orders. It is the single biggest threat to a software budget.
It's so easy to fall into that trap, too, thinking, oh, the new app just needs to talk to our legacy accounting software. Easy.
But the mechanics of that communication are incredibly complex. Does the legacy system even have an API? Are we relying on daily flat file exchanges?
Or is there any existing documentation, or is the poor vendor going to have to reverse engineer a database from, like, 2008?
Exactly. And you have to document your hard environmental constraints, too. If your IT department dictates that you are a strict Microsoft shop and every new application must run natively on Azure, that constraint fundamentally changes who is qualified to bid on your project.
Let's walk through a nightmare scenario to make this really concrete. Say a healthcare clinic wants a patient portal, but they fail to mention the specifics of their existing electronic health records system, their EHR.
That happens all the time. So the vendor wins the bid based on the assumption of a standard open API integration. They sign the contract, they begin the development sprints.
And then they hit a wall.
A massive wall. They discover that the clinic's specific legacy EHR utilizes a proprietary closed API. Connecting to it might legally require the development firm to be a certified integration partner with that specific EHR company.
Which I'm guessing is not a fast process.
It can take months and cost tens of thousands of dollars. The project stops dead in its tracks, simply because a critical integration constraint was omitted from the RFP.
Okay, so we've mapped out the operational pain, the required user outcomes, the compliance bedrock, and those hidden integration icebergs. Those are the traditional pillars of procurement.
Right.
But here's where it gets really interesting. We have to talk about the massive curveball that is completely rewriting the rules of software development right now. In 2026, any serious RFP must address an AI development policy.
Yeah, this is a landscape that barely existed in procurement 2 years ago.
It's wild.
It is a profound shift. It requires every organization issuing an RFP to ask three highly specific, non-negotiable questions about how artificial intelligence will be utilized by the vendor to write the actual code.
The first pillar is pretty straightforward. Permission. Like, are vendors actually allowed to deploy AI coding assistance on your project?
We are talking about utilizing tools like GitHub Copilot, Cursor, or Tad9.
And the consensus in the industry right now is generally, yes, right. The source says if it's governed with strict oversight, AI assistance dramatically improves the speed of boilerplate coding and reduces overall development costs.
It does, but that phrase, if governed with strict oversight, is doing a tremendous amount of heavy lifting there.
Yeah, I bet.
Which brings us immediately to the second pillar, which is data handling. This is where the corporate risk factor just skyrockets. You have to establish what restrictions apply to your proprietary data being processed through a vendor's AI tools.
If you're that healthcare clinic we mentioned earlier, actual patient data absolutely cannot be entered into an AI prompt or tool without a deeply vetted business associate agreement, a BAA, in place.
Yeah, and the risk extends far beyond healthcare. Just think about your core intellectual property. If your company's proprietary business logic, that complex secret algorithm that gives you a competitive edge, gets fed into a third-party AI tool by a vendor.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And that tool's training pipeline absorbs those inputs to train its future models. You have just leaked your trade secrets to the open market. The AI could theoretically use your proprietary logic to auto-suggest code for your direct competitor the very next week.
That is a genuinely terrifying prospect for any executive, and it perfectly sets up the third pillar, which is transparency. You need to know exactly how much of the final code base is AI-generated, and more importantly, what the human review process looks like.
So that review process is everything.
I like to think of this through the lens of, like, a high-end catering company. Imagine you hire a caterer for a massive corporate gala, and they have acquired this advanced AI sous chef robot for the kitchen.
Okay, I like where this is going.
This machine can chop vegetables, prep sauces, and plate appetizers at literal lightning speed. It's incredibly efficient, and it saves you a fortune on the overall catering bill. But regardless of how fast that robot works, you still demand that the human head chef actually tastes the soup before it is served to your VIP guests.
That's spot on. If we connect this to the bigger picture, unreviewed AI code carries the exact same operational and security risks as unreviewed human code.
Right. It can still make mistakes.
An AI coding assistant can confidently hallucinate a perfectly plausible-looking security vulnerability. The human software engineer must validate the output. Transparency in your RFP means demanding that the vendor prove to you their head chef is still tasting the soup.
We've navigated the AI minefield, so now the conversation naturally shifts to the most universally uncomfortable part of any business transaction.
The money.
The money. We need to talk about evaluating these vendors and establishing budget transparency. A core recommendation in the text is that organizations must openly share their evaluation weights with the bidding vendors.
Which means explicitly stating, we are basing our decision 40% on your technical approach, 30% on your relevant industry experience, and 30% on the final price.
Because if a vendor understands your weights, they will optimize their proposed solution to align with your actual priorities. It removes the guesswork.
It does.
But there is a major pushback point here regarding budget transparency. The standard advice is to share a clear budget range in the RFP. But if I'm a business owner and I publish a document stating my budget is strictly between $200,000 and $250,000?
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Aren't I just guaranteeing that every single proposal is going to miraculously arrive on my desk priced at exactly $249,999? Doesn't sharing the number just destroy my negotiating power?
This raises an important question, and it is arguably the most common fear in corporate procurement. But let's examine the economic reality of what actually happens when you hide the budget. Based on extensive data from Technigian from dozens of complex software engagements, forcing a vendor to guess your budget leads to one of two disastrous outcomes.
Oh, let's walk through those. What happens when they guess wrong on the low end?
They underbid simply to win the contract. But to hit that artificially low number, they are secretly omitting critical scope. Like comprehensive testing phases, Zential middleware integrations, or scalable cloud architecture. So they win the bid, but you end up paying for all of those necessary components later through exorbitant change orders.
And the project stalls and the relationship becomes adversarial.
Exactly.
And the other side of the coin, what if they guess high?
They scope a magnificent, gold-plated, highly customized enterprise solution that costs $500,000. It's a beautiful proposal, but it completely wastes their engineering resources to write it and your executive team's time to review it.
Because your company was never going to authorize a $500,000 expenditure in the first place.
Right.
So sharing the range isn't about surrendering your leverage at the negotiating table. It's about defining the boundaries of reality for the project.
Precisely. It scopes the vendor's architectural proposals to your actual investment capacity. It makes the eventual comparison between the varying proposals meaningful because every vendor is attempting to solve your specific operational problem within the exact same financial constraints.
That makes total sense.
And there is a very blunt reality to face here. If an organization genuinely cannot define a budget range, they are not ready to issue an RFP.
Oh, interesting. So if you don't know the budget, your RFP is entirely premature.
Yes. You need to back up and commission a dedicated discovery phase, or maybe a fixed price scoping exercise first. Don't waste the market's time or your own team's time with a massive open-ended RFP when you don't even know what capital is available to spend.
It is fundamentally about respecting the process and the resources of everyone involved.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's move to the moment of truth. You've done the work. The operational pain is beautifully defined. The functional outcomes are clear. The AI policy is rock solid. The budget range is published.
The proposals finally hit your desk.
Right. You're looking at a stack of incredibly polished PDFs. What are the subtle warnings that a disaster is hiding inside? What's the very first thing that should make a business owner nervous?
Silence.
Yes. If a vendor does not submit any clarifying questions during the RFP process, that is a massive red flag. Complex enterprise-level software projects are inherently messy and nuanced.
They always are.
If a vendor looks at your document and has zero questions about your legacy integrations or your compliance constraints, it means they aren't looking deeply enough at the actual problem. Serious, experienced vendors always probe for blind spots.
What about pricing structures? My instinct as a buyer is to look for a firm, fixed price so I know exactly what I'm paying. But a fixed price proposal for an inherently undefined or flexible scope is actually a warning sign, isn't it?
It is an illusion of safety. If the scope of the software isn't completely locked down to the final pixel, and a vendor still offers you a guaranteed fixed price, they aren't magically eliminating the risk of the unknown.
They're just calculating that risk and baking a massive premium into the final price tag.
Exactly. You're paying a heavy tax for their uncertainty.
Let's talk timelines. What if one vendor comes back with a delivery schedule that is suddenly, like, months faster than all the competitors?
While efficiency is great, an artificially fast timeline usually means they're quietly cutting vital corners. You need to push back immediately and ask them explicitly what phases of the software development lifecycle are you cutting to achieve this speed.
Which almost always leads to a lack of rigorous testing. A proposal that doesn't detail a comprehensive quality assurance phase, user acceptance testing, and clear criteria for what defines done is a proposal to ship defective software.
Software that ships without a rigorously defined testing process is software that ships with undiscovered defects, period. The final warning sign to look for is vague references to subcontracting.
This circles back to everything we've discussed about security. You have to ask if the engineers writing the code are full-time employees of the vendor, or if the work is being farmed out to third-party subcontractors.
And crucially, you need to know the geographic location of those subcontractors.
Right, because if your data is suddenly being handled by offshore teams with entirely different data privacy laws, your carefully crafted IPA compliance and AI handling policies might be completely compromised.
Exactly. When you look at how top-tier vendors actually handle this process, firms like Technegian, for example, they approach it collaboratively. They mandate a discovery call to catch those unstated assumptions.
And they have actual software engineers write the technical narrative of the proposal rather than just sales representatives.
Plus, they offer highly transparent pricing models that clearly separate the fixed known scope from the variable complex components. It is a partnership model, not an adversarial transaction.
So what does this all mean? If we step back and view this entire journey, what is the ultimate takeaway for you, the listener? A successful 2026 RFP is definitively not a checklist of 47 screens.
Definitely not.
It is a clear, quantifiable statement of your organization's operational pain. It requires a strict, uncompromising framework for non-functional requirements and legacy integrations.
It demands a forward-looking AI policy to protect your company's intellectual property.
And it relies on transparent budget criteria to anchor the project in reality.
Whether you are preparing to overhaul your company's entire technological infrastructure next week, or you simply want to be the sharpest, most informed voice in your next strategic planning meeting, the core lesson here is about respect.
Respecting the vendor's expertise by defining the problem rather than dictating the technical solution.
Empowering them to engineer the best possible outcome is your ultimate shortcut to a successful project.
It totally shifts the dynamic. You stop being a dictator handing down a spec sheet, and you start being a strategic partner. We've covered a lot of ground today regarding the sheer complexity of the modern software landscape. But to wrap up our deep dive, I'm going to hand it over for one final thought.
We have spent this entire discussion dissecting the reality of 2026, specifically how crucial it is for human beings to rigorously govern the AI tools that vendors use to write the software. But if we project just a few years down the road, the trajectory is staggering.
It really is.
How long until these AI tools are entirely writing and even evaluating these complex RFPs on their own? Will the corporate procurement process of 2030 simply consist of your company's highly trained AI negotiating scope, compliance frameworks, and budget allocations with the vendor's AI all in a matter of milliseconds? The future of procurement might just be human executives sitting back and watching the algorithms build the infrastructure of tomorrow. It is something to keep in mind the next time you sit down to draft an RFP.